Blog Talk Radio.
Chicken to say no to his wife, and therefore they're in Atlantic City.
I hear that, Butch. I hear that. There's nothing wrong with getting a little vacation time. I know I did the show when I got my vacation time. You know, I manned up and
That's
did
right.
the show, but
you manned
you
up.
You know, we'll let him go with the pass with that one.
Yeah, well, no, I didn't. I've already sent him an email. But we also, I did not know, our good friend Dr. Chris Panarella was in the Chester County Medical Center for almost a week this last week with kidney problems. And but he is he's going to be operated on Tuesday, but they let him home this weekend. And being the trooper that he is, we're going to call him in just a few minutes here. We're also going to get a hold of our friend Chad down in New Orleans, who is, as you know, Danny Batchelder's promoter. And we're going to, from the last part of the hour, we're going to be talking to Bernard Fernandez from the Philadelphia Daily News, a well-known, well-respected sports writer who dedicated his programs, his writing to boxing, so he's got a lot of good background for us there, too. So
that should be yeah. wonderful.
Yeah. So it was a pretty good week, I think. A lot of announcements out. Geez, the 30th of November has got to be the busiest day for home box office, Showtime, and even individuals with a lot of things being announced today. So we're going to we'll go over those, I'm sure. But I know why he didn't come on tonight. One minute, his good friend Marquez got his butt beat. He's afraid to face this. Ah, I can't believe this.
Yeah, badly won by a decision. And it was a good fight. It was no knockdowns, no real back and forth ebb and flow drama. It was a close fight. It was a close fight. And some rounds were hard to score. Me personally, I thought Marquez won by a round or two. But in all honesty, I can't be mad at the decision. Or really the judges' cards, because they had it close also.
Yeah, yeah. That was a good and now he says he's going to retire from boxing. Did you see that?
No, Cass said that.
Yeah, he said he's going to go back to his home country, and he's going to retire. He thinks that he's had enough. But
that's well deserved retirement. You know, after his career, he's fought many names, and he's put in the work to where he can retire very, very satisfied with his career.
Well, you know, I was wondering just where this whole thing was going to go as far as who was going to step up next for Timothy Bradley. But I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of people now wanting to get in there, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Bradley, I mean, even after the Provotnikov fight, he looked vulnerable. And, the fight against Marquez didn't show really any different. It kind of looked like the way everyone thought it would look.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, Bradley, he's a difficult opponent for anybody. He's a difficult win for anybody. Obviously, he's undefeated. But at the same time, people, you know, they say, I could see how to beat Tim Bradley. You know, he might have what you could call weaknesses. Mm-hmm. But in all honesty, I mean, nobody's beaten him. And he fought in some good competition.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, because when we had Edner Cherry on a couple of weeks ago, one of his statements was that he doesn't hit hard.
No, Brad doesn't appear to hit hard at all. But,
right.
I mean, well, to be honest, he seems to not hit hard to the head. But when Bradley digs into the body, he digs in hard. He hits hard to the body. He heavy bats.
Yeah. Well, so we don't have our third person on. I'm going to call Chad while we got it live here, instead of taking him into the. try to call him a little earlier and couldn't get through, but Danny got through to him for us.
Hello?
Hey, Chad, this is Frank Carroll. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
You're doing good. You're on the air with my good friend Zito and myself here on Fighting Words, and I tried to call you earlier, and I had to text Danny to make sure that I had the right number and ask him to give you a call.
You must not have the right number.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do was, as we had talked the other night, can you give us a little background on your operations that you have down there?
In all honesty, I boxed. I've been boxing since 1980. I turned professional in August of 1989. I've had several professional fights. And at the end of my boxing career, you know, I had never made, like, any real money. And so I decided, like, kind of like a God put a dream in my heart to just do my own fights. And I was actually, like, promoting and fighting the main event of the cards. And it worked out fairly well. And then when I've known this all along that whenever I retired from boxing, I was going to start promoting fights. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do, like, really good, credible fights, the whole system set up and everything. And it's been a working process, and it hasn't been as easy as I thought it would be. But on an overall scale, I would say I'm doing very well.
Good, good. Now, how many boxers do you have in your stable at this point?
I probably have about 10 guys that, like, are reachable. 12 guys that are reachable that I can access, that I can do things with, and so forth. I mean, you know, more than anything, I think that, like, I was shortened, or, like, I was not treated the way I should have been treated, and I'm just excited to be doing this, and, like, more than anything, like, I'm a living testimony, and I mean, I don't know if you know, but I mean, my story would blow your mind, and I just enjoy it. Especially good people. I have a kid, Mason Menard, Danny Batchelder, like two kids Danny's not a kid, but, you know, they just, they're so just amazing people. You know, a lot of kids today, you know, well, who I'm fighting? Well, man, well, that dude's this and that, you know, and Mason and Danny, they just, like, get in line and say, okay, whoever I'm fighting. You know, I mean, let's go. Let's do this. And, you know, I mean, they all know that really, Louisiana has been looked down upon for generations as, you know, limited fighters. You know, and I said, you know, I want to change the face of boxing in Louisiana. And Danny's been a tremendous addition to what we've been doing. He's a good, credible boxing guy. He knows the system. He knows what's going on. And, like, I told him, I said, you know, the best thing about this is that, like, we can just scratch through all the, I'm your promoter, I'm your manager, I'm your booking agent, I'm your brother. That's, like, you know, that's a few things.
Yeah, as we were talking to Danny, you know, I've known Danny for many, many years. As we were talking to him last week, I mentioned to him that I've never heard him so clear, so focused, and I think you're doing a tremendous job with him, and I appreciate it because you know, Danny could get off on some wild tangents there for a while, but I'm glad to hear that he's back home, that, you know, he's got everything is turned around for him, and it really is is great to hear.
Yeah, and it is, and Danny's such an outstanding guy. he's been a blessing. And, like, you know, people in Louisiana are different from people in New York. I mean, and I've been to New York. I've stayed in Staten Island for several months. I've been to California, beloved. I've been to England. I've been to, you know, different places. And I guess there's no place like Louisiana. And I've learned that from Danny coming here, from Billy Bailey coming fight here. And it was like, man, people are so nice over here. And, you know, everybody, people like Danny. People really like Danny down here. And he's an exciting fighter. I mean, he isn't fighting household names just yet, you know. But, you know, he's consistent. And, you know, he was off for a while. And I just think with consistency equals better, you know, and he only gets better from this stage out. And we're going to start stepping up. And I'm working on, actually right now I'm working on like a 10,000-seat arena. I mean, to fulfill the dream of Chad Broussard for these boys, I want to do like a mega fight in that place where I can afford to pay everyone with their supposed to be.
You're fighting out of a casino down there now. How many seats do you have in your current arena?
Well, I've been working three casinos. Have one in Opelousas. I mean, they probably have. You could probably say the capacity. I mean, it's been a couple times. It's been they had probably 1,200 seats on the ground and probably 800 people standing up. Danny's fought there once. We did another casino. It's called Cypress Bayou Casino. It probably holds 1,600 people. And last time it was standing room only. He does well. You know, the more he fights here, the more he becomes a household name here, and the more people want to see him. And you know, I'm praying by mid-2014. We get the venue that I'm looking into, and we can do that fight, and we can put on six fights of top-notch, top-quality fighters all the way across the board.
Mm-hmm.
This is Vito. I was just wondering, what would you do, if anything, different with your fighters as far as a promoter than other promoters are doing now, if anything?
Well, and I'm going to be honest, I might hit you in the head when I say this, but I love these guys. I do. I enjoy spending time with them. I enjoy, like, I'm not your normal average promoter. If I would walk into a room, you would never in a million years say that that guy is a promoter. There's no way you would say that. I am, like, I want to be in their lives. I care about them. I don't use them as a ploy to bring in money for Chad Broussard. I'm there in their life. I want, not only in boxing, I want to help them in the overall aspect of life. I've had so many adversities in my life. I've fallen so many times that, like, I normally can help them not to fall. And I try to build relationships with these guys. And, you know, we have trust in one another. They know that I have their best interests at heart. And I'm doing the best that I can with what we're afforded. And that's like, you know, to as far as to take them and go and sail them off on a river, I'm just not into doing that. I've had several fight offers for that kid, Mason Minard, that I manage and promote. And but it's like the shadiest deal of all. You know, it's just like these little sideways deals, and I'm just not interested in putting any of them in dangerous, deep, shark-infested waters with someone that like, just doesn't care anything about them.
Well, you know, we wanted to test the truth of this, though, so we brought in a specialist. Caller, do you want to announce yourself?
Hey, it's Danny Batchelor. I heard my man Ted on. I had to call.
Chad,
a breakdown here. Yeah, go ahead, Chad.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying. I'm trying. This is what I'm hoping and dreaming for, that when I say I'm doing a fight, people are, don't worry about who's fighting because they know that's how credible the fight will be. People, they just going to get a ticket, and that's how we're gonna try. So I'm trying to do it, and Danny's been amazing. He really has. I mean, and the probably the best thing about it is Danny knows the game. He's been around the game. He's been got over on. He's got over on people. I'm sure he's done all those things. And Danny'll tell you, I'm for real. I'm not just guy that'll paint a picture for you, and then the picture, like, as you walk away from it, it goes astray and goes invisible. I'm like, I'm real, and if I tell you I'm going to do something, it's a done deal. I'm never going to say I'll do this for you, Dan, and then turn around and say, well, you know, I really can't do it. It's just, I'm really, literally trying to change the face of boxing in the South.
Mm-hmm. Good. So, good. And you're working again. I know Danny said you have a show coming up on the 30th of November, and where is that going to be?
It was supposed to be on the 30th of November at Cyber Body Casino. However, they called me yesterday morning, and they kind of changed the face on it. So we're going to move it to December 6th at Evangeline Downs in Opelousas, Louisiana.
Good. That's
where Danny initially came in.
That's a great place.
Yeah.
It's not the biggest place, but it is the coolest, quaintest little venue around. Like, it really is. Uh-huh. It's really, really nice. I would like them to enlarge it by about 3,000 people, but, you know.
Well, you know, that may work out to your advantage, because the weekend of November 30th, everybody and their brother is fighting that weekend, either on Showtime or HBO or whatever. But it's also Thanksgiving weekend, so people that would want to travel to see it won't be able to travel because of the weekend. But that moving it back a week and moving it to a nicer place, a bigger place, that's probably going to work out well for you.
Well, and you see, I didn't even think about it in that aspect, and like that might be just God's answer prayers.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Chisora's fighting on the 30th. You've got Diaz fighting on the 30th. You have who else? Alexander. Mike Alexander's going to Alvarado. I'm sorry, Mike Alvarado's going to be working on the 30th. So you've got a lot of guys fighting that night. So that would have taken away from your crowd. Here you got you'll be in a week that they don't have anything listed as far as I can see right now. But that'd be great.
Yeah. Well, you probably more accurate than I am. So, like, I mean, I'm thankful that they've done that. I'm just like, I love doing this. I love meeting new people to come in and fight. I love, you know, I befriend everyone that comes fight. I don't just talk to my guys or the people that I know. I go meet the guys that I don't know. And I shake their hand. I like to get to know them, and I like to know the way they think about things and what can I do to improve the shows. And, you know, my people have gone to my wife after fights, and they've made recommendations to her. And she said, well, you need to tell Chad. She said, but I'll make sure that he gets the information, you know, because I want the fans to be pleased with what happens in the fight.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, you know, we really appreciate you taking the time here to talk to us, and It's great to learn. It's always great to learn something new every day, but to learn that a guy like you is then what you've done, and I, like I said, I've never heard Danny so clear, so focused, not on his family and on his profession. That I really appreciate everything you're doing for him. So When you're ready, you have your shows, you let us know, and we will put it on the radio. We're now doing between 90 and 136,000 people per show. So we have a pretty good following worldwide, which is nice. So we'll try and get
That's
some people
great.
To your fights.
Amen. Thank you so much. And thank you very much for the call and having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. Hey, that was great. Dan, how's things going up there?
Going great, guys. Going great. Getting ready to kind of officially get training going tomorrow. I'm always in the gym, staying kind of in shape, but gonna step it up starting tomorrow. Just been hanging out with the kids a lot and stuff, lately, and things are going good, man. Feeling good, feeling great.
Good.
Just excited about this, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think this is probably the turn in your life that you really need it, and I think this is going to be great for both of you.
You know, I've always said, you know, I've never been. For the last couple of years, I need somebody to have my back a little bit. You know what I mean? I probably need it. And one thing led to another. You know, sometimes things work out. Sometimes they don't. But you know, I met Chad, and man, Chad's been great. Done everything exactly to how he said he would. And now this time around, I'm ready. You know, when it comes time for me to get that big one, trust me, I'm gonna get it.
Good. Good.
But I had to at least call and say hi to all you guys, man. You guys are like family, so at least wanted to hear your voices for a minute.
Good. All right, well, we're gonna take a break here for a minute, and then we're gonna call in our resident what would we call him? His boxing historian, Dr. Chris Panarella, and then after that we're gonna have Mr. Bernard Fernandez from the Philadelphia Daily News, and now he's writing for the sports page for World News. So you're welcome to stay on with us, Dan. I'm just going to call him because we don't have Ty on with us tonight. He had whipped out and had to go with his wife to do something. Yeah, my wife's not here. That's why I can say that, right?
Dan, I actually have a question for you. I asked Chad, what do you do different?
Hello?
As a promoter?
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good.
Good.
Just got in. I just finished off a piece of pie.
There you go.
Costco. man, it's starting a little drop of rain up here. Other than that, it's pretty damn nice.
Good.
What's going on, guys?
We got Zito on
hey,
with us, and our good friend Danny Batchowder. He's a fighter who's going to be back up in the in those high ranks again very shortly.
Good.
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
I borrow money off of him when he makes. don't forget me.
Yeah, it's heard about fair play, right? All the guys you let into.
You buy now. You can buy stock in athletes. Did you see
there
that
you
TV today?
Yeah, I did. Jeez.
You can invest in Rodriguez.
Floyd Mayweather.
I recommend Rodriguez. You lose your shirt.
Danny?
No, the Alex.
Oh,
Alex Rodriguez, the baseball player.
Oh yeah,
that'd be good
Rod.
Too.
What?
Yeah. Well, hey, Z, you had a question for Danny. I'm going to go off here for just a second and get Bernard.
Oh, yeah. Danny, I was asking Chad, what would he do different as a promoter than other promoters do for his fighters? I want to ask you, as a boxer, fan of your promoter.
What does Chad do different?
Oh, yeah, well, what would you demand your promoter as a fighter?
Well, I mean, the thing that made me click with Chad was this. Now, I've been very fortunate. You know, I was with Team Tyson for a long time. I've been around the big promoters. I've been around everybody in the game. I've been in it for a long time. But the thing that impressed me with Chad is Chad does exactly what he says. how he says he's going to do it. There is no change up. There is no he's different from day to day. And he gets to know his fighters. All his fighters like Chad, respect Chad, because Chad goes over everything with him first. There is no surprises. There is no, oh, I'm switching up and doing this. He gives you his word. He keeps his word. And he's fair. Like, you know, if the night's better, you know, I mean, he makes it better for everyone, not just himself. And, you know, he's a fair man. He's honest. He gets to know you on a personal level. I mean, he's to the point where, like, he wants to know about your kids, how your kids' day are, and this and that. He does it for more than one fighter. He does it for quite a few. You know what I mean? I mean, he cares about the fighter's well-being, how they're making it, how they're doing it. I mean, he's a different type of guy. And even his shows, like when I first got with him, you know, he was a smaller promoter, so I showed up to the venue kind of expecting, you know, a little ring there, some lights, you know. I mean, you'd be shocked how he does it. Like, if you guys go down there, I mean, he's got, like, the big professional lights up over the ring. Like, he gives everybody, like, a full experience. Like, he pours his all into everything he does. And he not only wants to make it for himself, he wants you to make it. Like, he pushes you to be your best. And, you know, he talks game plans over with you. He talks opponents over with you. He talks, you know, he goes with you step by step. So there's no guesswork. There's no wondering what your man's going to do. He makes it very, very nice.
Yeah. That's pretty rare.
It's very rare. And, I mean, he's honest. Like, he not yet one time has not come through with what he said he was going to come through with. Not even close.
Hey, guys, we're joined by one of the premier sports boxing writers in the United States, Bernard Fernandez. And Bernard, welcome tonight.
Oh, glad to be here.
Hey, I know that you go back to New Orleans a lot, and Danny's fighting down there. Danny, would you tell Bernard a little bit about Chad and his organization?
Chad Broussard is his name. He does the boxing card promotions. Our next fight's December 6th down in Appaloosa at the Evelyn's and Downs Casino. He puts shows down all around there, Lafayette in that area. He does a lot in Appaloosa at the Evelyn's and Downs Casino. And he's done a few at the Cypress Bayou. Good promoter, man. He really puts on great shows.
Oh, great. Yeah, we were just down in New Orleans for about 2 months and came back. Since my retirement in April of last year, I was born and raised in New Orleans, as was my wife, and we've been in Philadelphia for about 30 years. So now that I'm retired, we sort of split time between down there and up here. It's a good arrangement.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's nice.
Well, you know, you guys all have – Chris, you and I are the out guys on this because even Zito was born down there, or Zito's father was born down in the bayous there.
Well,
they got a few Italians down there. my lieutenant in the Army was Lieutenant Fontana. He had a southern accent. And he was Italian looking. I looked at him and, what the hell? Yeah. He won the court-martial me besides all that. I was a captain because I slept through all his boring lectures. They sent me to the colonel. So... That was my experience with a southern Louisiana Italian. Christ.
Hey, Bernard, one of the questions I had was, and Zito and I were talking about it earlier, the Timothy Bradley fight. How did you see that come out? Did you feel that was the right outcome?
Yeah. I had it 8-4 for Bradley. I think one judge had it 8-4, you know. So I thought it basically he can control the flow. I know a couple other people had it closer, or you know even had it going the other way, but that's the way I saw it.
Yeah, when we had one of the fellows who had fought Bradley prior, Edner Cherry was. On with us about a week ago, and he had mentioned that he doesn't hit hard in the head, but then Zito is our really our mechanics guy, and he was saying that yes, That's true, but when it gets to the body, he really tears it up. Is that pretty much the way you see it?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I think Bradley's been kind of vilified a little bit because when he got the decision over Manny Pacquiao, a lot of people act like he had done something wrong. I mean, he had no control over how the judges scored. I certainly didn't think he won that fight, but he came back and had the really exciting fight with Provodnikov. Now he's got this nice victory. I just thought it was not right to blame him for maybe, you know, what the judges did in the Pacquiao fight.
Uh-huh. But yeah, but it's funny you bring that name up because Provodnikov is fighting tonight with Mikey Alvarez. What do you think that? How do you think that would come out?
Well, if push comes to shove, you know, I'd have to go with Alvarado. I think he's got probably a little bit more complete package of skills. Provodnikov obviously, you know, came on everybody's radar a little bit more, you know, with the Bradley fight, but I like Alvarado in that fight.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Chris, what's your choice on that one?
It's up in the air for me on that one. I'd have a hard time picking one there. One of the few times I'm not, you know, sure who's going to win. I'm never right anyway, so what the hell is the difference? You know? You make money betting against me. You know?
See what you're
guys
what
pay
doing?
Their mortgages off up here betting against me.
I have to agree with because Mike Alvarado, he does have a more diverse game plan. He's a little bit more well-rounded. But Provodnikov, he hits harder than Brandon Rios. And Alvarado tended to get hit a lot against Brandon Rios. I suggest he doesn't do that with Provodnikov. So really, I would say it's kind of up in the air with me to where I favor Alvarado by decision.
Well, that's two votes for Alvarado.
Yeah, how about you, Dan?
You know, man, I mean, I'm not really – I don't know enough about them guys, to tell you the truth. And the little bit that I know, it does look like a real hard fight to pick. I mean, Alvarado, I think, does have a few more choices. Like, I don't think he's getting as much banging as the other guy does. I think he can kind of step back, box a little bit. So, I don't know, really. I wouldn't know who to pick myself either.
That one guy is awful tough, though. Ooh. That guy that fought Bradley, gave Bradley a hell of a fight. He is tough. That's who you're talking about, right?
Yeah,
the
yeah,
kid
I mean,
from Siberia?
Yes.
Yeah.
The kid, yeah, you got to be mean up there, live up there.
Yeah.
Man, that's a hell of a place. Do you remember they showed you where he lived? One road through the town, everybody existed on moose and deer and bear meat. No other foods up there, no vegetables, no farming, Christ. And that kid was tough. But like I say, he's not schooled enough yet, you know. You know, maybe his roughness and his unorthodox roughness will overcome. I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to say. But he does hit pretty damn hard, too.
Oh, that's why they're
well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, hey, fellas,
I got to run.
I got movie time
okay,
with
Danny.
My boys. I just wanted to say hi real quick.
All right. Thanks, Danny. Thanks for everything. Appreciate
it. You guys are the best, man. I'll talk with you soon.
Okay. Take care.
Take care.
Hey, I got something that I wanted to mention. A few weeks back, 2-3 weeks ago, you had asked me when the papers got away from deciding the fights, when it happened,
right.
Why it happened, and I
right.
didn't have a really good answer. But I went back through my father's old books, and I found out that most of the fights in the early part of the century were no decision bouts. And that's why the papers made the decision. But what happened, everybody wanted to bet on the fights, and all your bets were local at the arena itself. They would bet amongst themselves. But the bookies wouldn't take any bets on them because of no decision right at the end. Then people bet they want to be paid, you know. So little by little, they started bringing judges in, mainly because they want to know who the winner was at the end of the fight, and they didn't want to read the papers the next day, and they wanted to bet. And there wasn't that much going on in the sports world. You had football, college football, baseball, and boxing. And there wasn't a hell of a lot of betting going on, and people used to look forward to betting on fights, and they couldn't do it, and the bookies couldn't make any money. And one thing led to another. Next thing you know, you had referees and you had judges, so that all that could end at the end of the fight. And in the 20s is about when it went out. I looked through some old records. I got some ring record books back into the 29-30 era, and a guy would fight 200 fights, and half of them would be no decision bouts. Do you remember the movie star Victor McLaughlin?
Yeah.
The big guy that always played in the John Wayne movies, the big sergeant?
Yeah.
The big tough guy he fought in. He played in The Quiet Man.
Yeah,
with John Wayne.
If anybody believes that he was Maureen O'Hara's brother, that's some genealogy.
Yeah. Well,
he was too ugly to be Maureen O'Hara's brother.
Yeah. Well, you know, he fought Jack Johnson in no decision bout, an 8-round bout on the West Coast in Vancouver, Canada, 1907. And that was a no decision bout, except that Jack Johnson stopped him around the sixth or seventh round, and he stopped the fight. But it was more for betting, bookies, and you know, people getting paid at the end of the fight, and no arguing, rather than have the newspaper do it the next day, you know. So it didn't hang around long. Once, you know, like Jack Dempsey was the odds on Dempsey. Christ, everybody wanted to bet on Dempsey, and you know, those guys, they couldn't bet because so they put the judges in and said, "Wait, we're going to change this round," and that's about the way what started it. And the Associated Press always it was, they were number one. They always gave their opinion, and it was more of a Monday morning quarterback opinion than anything else, you know. The fight had already been decided, and but it didn't last. I'd say into the middle 20s, it was all over with. I went to an old ring, you know. I went to an old ring thing down in Philly where all the old fighters showed up. They had a ring 14, and those guys all fought in the 20s, and they had their records with them, and half their bouts were no decision bouts. And they'd fight every 6-7 days. I was shocked. Three times a month they'd fight.
Talking about
that. 20 rounders. 30
yeah.
round fights.
Oh, they were there. They were battling Nelson days. That's in the, you know, early. And, oh, God, those things used to go on forever. In the John L. Sullivan era, on up to about another 15, 20 years after he quit. Then they put a limit on it. Then the Marquess of Queensberry rules come out, and they changed all that. So now the quadrangle, the UFC, they set boxing back 100 years, those guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The rules used to be no biting, no kicking, no gouging.
Yeah.
This is for a boxing bout.
Yeah.
They ought to bring it back. Christ. I look at the quadrangle, and I watch them guys fight. Christ, anything goes. Like the old-fashioned fighting. You know?
Bernard, we got into this a few weeks ago because of some of the decisions that have come down, and the fact that some of it looks like somebody may have been screwed around with the numbers. And we had asked Chris if he could tell us more about they used to have outside people other than the judges make decisions on the card. And that's where you were getting your numbers from. But do you remember of anything like that would have that you can add in here to help us out?
Well, I know that Fox Sports 1, they've got a I think they still might have some kinks in the system, where basically they're going to have members of the Boxing Writers Association of America do something with. I guess, with their iPhones or iPads, where they can basically score along with live fights that are on Fox Sports 1, Golden Boy fights, and so therefore it won't just be informal sampling of ringsiders on how they judge the fight in comparison to the official judges. You might have 30, 40 boxing writers, so you'll have some sort of consensus there. I think one of the problems that you run into with controversial decisions, obviously, some people say a zebra is a black animal with white stripes, and some people say it's a white animal with black stripes. But I think that too many state commissions and even the sanctioning bodies worldwide, too often these assignments are going to people that are politically connected. Maybe they contributed to the governor's campaign, and they wound up on the state athletic commission. There has to be a little bit more stringent training seminars so that people know what they're looking for. And, quite frankly, I keep seeing some of the same judges turn up whose work I'm not a big fan of. There are some very good judges, but there's some other ones that, they keep turning up like bad pennies.
Now, as I understood it, talking to a local judge here, all they have to do is sit ringside with another judge while they're in mentorship, I guess you would call it, for 10 fights and score 10 fights. Is that how they do it? Is that
your understanding? Well, they're supposed to start off with, in the amateur ranks. Uh-huh. And, if they work enough amateur bouts, then presumably they graduate to professional ranks with four-rounders and six-rounders. And move up the full food chain, but it seems to me sometimes people get jumped up without the requisite body of work that they're supposed to have. I'm never going to question anybody's integrity or say that that they were biased or what have you, but I think that there are occasions when that maybe they're not seeing what everybody else is seeing, and you just scratch your head. Look, bad decisions or controversial decisions have been around as long as there's been boxing. You see the same thing in the Olympics with figure skating or anything else where somebody is offering an opinion. Unless you go back to the bare knuckle days where you come up to the mark and you got to knock the guy out to win a fight, I'm not sure how you can eliminate that. I mean, it's part of the game, and I'm not really sure how you can get away from it.
Now, Bernard, there's a lot of talk of a national commission as far as boxing's concerned. Do you think that's a good idea as far as limiting the corruption, or do you think that actually broadening it?
Well, I've thought about this, and I really think that a federal commission would be a good idea if you had someone who was an absolute czar, who was totally fair, totally unbiased, and had total authority to make things happen. But that's never going to happen.
I agree. Never going to happen.
Look, we're I'm from New Orleans, and I was born and raised there, and ask people down there how FEMA was as a federal, federal bureaucracy after Katrina. My standing joke is that a giraffe is a horse designed by a federal committee. I really think that what you might wind up with is something that might be even worse than we have now, difficult as that might be to believe. Look, you've got the WBO, the WBA, the IBF, the WBC. One is headquartered in Mexico City, another one in Venezuela, another in Puerto Rico, one in New Jersey. Boxing is an international sport. if you impose federal laws on international entities, I'm not really sure how much authority that they would have over bouts that occur out of the country or involving fights, foreign fighters that are fighting in the United States. It would just open up a whole can of worms. I mean, a bigger can of worms possibly than we already have. So I'm not really sure what the answer is. I wish I was that wise. I've kicked this around, and I'm not really sure there's a definitive answer on how to make boxing decisions totally fair, absolutely correct all the time. I just don't see it happening.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Chris, you've been that frame of mind since the Tiberi decision. I know your feelings.
Long before that.
Yeah.
I saw a million bad decisions in my day. Mm-hmm. And you know, the promoters have control of the sport. And TV's trying to work in there a little bit. You see what they do with Mayweather, some of the fighters, they bought the fighters, but they get out quick too. They don't stay there long. I never seen a TV, like NBC. They don't stay in it too long. They get mixed up with them guys, and they realize, let's get the hell out of here. You know, we're in a wrong ball game with these guys. You've got the Bob Arums, you've got the Lou Duvis, you've got the a whole different world. It's a different world. When you look at the NFL, how it's structured. It's never going to happen in boxing, never. It's too far gone now, you know what I mean? It's too established. You got a huge amount of money in promotions today, and like the gentleman said, internationally, what authority? We have some local laws around here. They want to invoke some local laws, and the commissioner said, why invoke them? We can't enforce them. Nobody's paying any attention to them, so what the hell, leave it alone. And I think it'll always be the way it is. You know, you'll have a Don King move through the area, and then another one will come in just as bad, with different personality, that's all. Yeah. Been that way since I was a kid. It's promoter-controlled. They boost their fighters. They boost their fighters. The more publicity they can get for their fighters, the bigger the draw, the bigger the payday for them. So they, they're in control. They're not going to give up that control. Yeah. Could you imagine Don King, Bob Arum, Lou Duva? Could you imagine the three of them trying to sit down and agree on anything?
No.
They'd be killing each other before the night was over. They'd be shooting each other.
Yeah.
Especially with a dollar. Who's going to get the most of the dollars? You know. So I don't think it's going to happen.
When Larry Hazard was executive director of the New Jersey State Athletic Control Board, he had an idea, which also proved to be unfeasible, and that was to have open scoring. In other words, post the scores round by round so that everybody in the arena, including the fighters in their corners, would know what was what as far as the scoring, rather than just wait till the end. The problem.
Right, I remember.
Yeah, the problem with that is that if you get somebody who gets up 3, 4, 5 points going into the last couple of rounds, and he knows he's that far up, he's going to run like a thief. And why stand and trade with somebody if you know you can't be caught in the scorecards unless you get knocked out?
You're right. It could change the direction of the fight.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
nobody's going to throw caution to the obviously the guy who's behind would, but. But I think that's what happened in the Oscar De La Hoya-Tito Trinidad fight. Oscar thought he had that fight in the bag. I mean, I thought he had it won, and a lot of other people thought he had it won. So the last couple of rounds, he said, hey, I'm going to play it safe. I'm not going to take a chance on getting bopped on the chin and getting knocked out. And I think he was the most surprised guy in the arena when they announced the scorecards and he had lost the fight. But, you don't want to see people get on their horse and run the last three rounds because they know they're too far ahead to be caught.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes for a bad fight. It does make for a bad fight. It didn't last long. Matter of fact, Larry Hazard was the one involved in the Tibiri-Tony
right.
problem. Was he the ref that night, or
I believe he was.
Was he the boxing commissioner?
He was the executive director of the New Jersey State Athletic Control.
Oh, was he? Okay.
That was a bad decision. And if you recall, Dave Tibiri never fought again. I mean, he took
right.
it to the extreme.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, Dave's a good friend of ours.
He got down on the whole sport.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you had Jersey Joe Walcott in there for a while. Yeah, Jersey Joe Walcott was head of the Jersey. He just let things go. He was just a nice guy. He didn't want to be bothered. They gave him a job. He was happy about it. But he didn't change anything. Jersey's tough, man. Jersey's a tough state.
Yeah.
Tough state to change anything. I wouldn't want to try to change anything in that state. So now with the casinos, every casino wants to put shows on. There's not enough fighters, and they're making all kind of concessions to get the fighters and like I say, they really I don't know how you'd go about it fairly. I mean, we got them up in the Poconos now. You got them at every Indian casino. You got fights everywhere. There's a lot of work around for a lot of young guys, but I don't think the promoters are really going to give up that power. I think the sport is too. It's too far going in that direction to ever become an NFL or like a baseball or like the NBA. It's too far going. And you're dealing with entirely different people.
Bernard, let me move to a different subject over here. We got the news out yesterday that there's a possibility of a Floyd Mayweather and Amir Khan fight possibly early of 2014. Do you see that happening?
Well, obviously, Floyd Mayweather has fought several Golden Boy fighters. He doesn't like Oscar De La Hoya, but he seems to work real well with Richard Schaefer, the chief operating officer of Golden Boy. So they've been able to do a number of bouts. It's easy to make. I think you will continue as long as Floyd remains in the game. I mean, obviously, he's got his own promotional company now, but they do a lot of business with Golden Boy. Those fights are easy to make. Well, there are a lot of problems, but I think one of the main problems in boxing is that you have HBO. They won't put on Golden Boy fighters, and Showtime won't put on top rank fighters, and they have this problem that premium cable. Company won't show fighters that are promoted by this particular entity and vice versa. So therefore, some of the most attractive possible matchups that can be made aren't made. It's not just Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, which should have happened 3 years ago. They're just not possible due to who's promoted by who and who is allowed to fight on which network. And so the best possible matchups aren't always available to the public, and I think that's one of the biggest problems we have. I think even more so than controversial decisions.
I think Amir Khan and Mayweather would be a tough sell to the public. I mean, I really don't have any desire to see it.
No chance to be Floyd Mayweather. I mean, if the Floyd Mayweather we all know shows up, I mean, he's going to tune up Amir Khan like he has just about everybody he's fought, in the last 10 years.
It wouldn't be worth getting excited about. You'd have to, I wouldn't particularly pay $50 to watch it. I mean, I don't think that much of it. There's so many guys he could fight that could give him a good fight that, at least you have a little interest in it. Amir Khan, I just don't see it. So.
Yeah.
Well, if Canelo Alvarez couldn't give him a fight, I mean, I'm not really sure where Amir Khan can, Robert Guerrero didn't, and any number of other guys didn't. I mean, he's that far separated from everybody else at this point. he's a superstar, you know, he makes a lot of money, but at some point people are going to say, I'm not going to plunk down 50 or 60 bucks to see another glorified card session.
Wait.
Yeah.
And you're talking about Floyd and Danny Garcia also.
Nah. Another one that I don't like. I wouldn't go for that either. Like maybe Rios, if he matured a little bit, you know, somebody like that would, you know, have an outside shot. But I don't. Not too many guys around that are going to outbox Mayweather. He's going to die of old age, as champion. I don't know. You know, the other night I got an interesting thing. All the sports writers were talking about Sugar Ray Leonard. How do you think Sugar Ray would do against Mayweather? I was surprised. 80% said Sugar Ray would knock him out. I thought about it, but I'm thinking of his great fights with Tommy Hearns and some of the great fights with Duran, and I'm thinking, who the hell? That would be a hell of a fight. Now, that you'd pay $100 to see, you know? Yeah, I'd love to imagine. Can you imagine if you could recreate that fight?
Wow.
Another fight that, you know, like a dream fight that I think would be really interesting to see, you know, would be a prime-on-prime Manny Pacquiao and Roberto Duran. Now, that'd be a fight that I would like.
Whoa. Yeah, that would have been something in his day.
I don't know if Pacquiao would have wanted that.
No, who the hell won the fight? Nobody won. You know, Duran in his prime was he was so good with what he did. He was a better defensive fighter than anybody ever gave him credit for. And he used to throw a combination dip, let your punches go over his head, come back up. He used to work up and down. You don't see many fighters do that anymore. I thought an awful lot of Duran. I have to rank him up there with the tops of all times, in the top five of all times.
I think he's the best 135-pounder. I mean, you know, when he went up in weight, obviously, at one point he got all the way to super middleweight,
right.
But at 135 pounds, he was almost untouchable.
He was tough as nails. He'd get you. Before the 15th round, he'd find a way to get you. He might be in for 12 rounds, but you look out, you know, he'd find a way. He'd find a way to get you. I saw a lot of guys, Esteban De Hoos, or however you want to pronounce his last name, was outboxing, and Duran couldn't do a thing. About the 14th round, boom, gone. You know, I mean, he had about a 5-round lead. And but Duran just stays on you. He was dangerous at all times. I remember when he won the title against the Scotchman. That night, that's the first time I ever saw him. I thought, whoa, where did this guy come from? That's a long time ago. And I thought of the great lightweights I've seen, Ike Williams. You know, I got to go with Ike Williams, and I'm thinking, what a fight Ike Williams and him would have been. Oh, my God, you know?
How do you think Cesar Chavez Sr. and Duran fight would have went?
Well, I'm a big fan of Julio Cesar Chavez, but at the top of his game, you know, prime on prime, I'd still go with Duran. I mean,
you know what? Chavez's best punch was left hook to the body. He would never have gotten away with that with Duran because he used to stand up and throw it. He would drop his left hand and throw a left hook to the body, and his whole left side was open for right hands. That was Duran's. Duran, I think, would have come in there and smashed him right in the face about, you know, and by the sixth round, I think would have had his eye closed, and I think he would have won. Because, like I say, Chavez relied too much on that left hook to the body, and the way he used to throw it from a stand-up position, he was very vulnerable to counter right hands, and you're talking probably the best counter right hand puncher was Roberto Duran of all the lightweights. You know?
A lot of people got excited the last couple of years that they had another Chavez with his name, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. coming up, but I've seen enough of him to know that he's got the name, but he doesn't have the game.
No, he's
not even a shadow of what his father was.
Yeah, he grew up.
And, you know, now he's too damn big. He better fight it where the weight he belongs at, 175. Stop being a clown trying to lose weight and fight smaller guys. He's a big boy. He's big enough to fight where he belongs. But he don't have his father's heart or his guts.
That's beginning to cost Junior. He's coming in big, and he looked terrible against Vera. I mean, he lost the fight, in my opinion, and got the decision. But he looked terrible, and that's beginning to cost him. He's coming in heavier against these guys, and that's his only advantage. That's not going to keep working for him.
Well, he lost every second, every minute of every round up until, you know, the last minute of the 12th round against Sergio Martinez. And, you know, I mean, of course, everybody says, well, he almost knocked him out in the 12th round, which is true. But up to that point, I mean, he was on the wrong end of a shutout.
Yeah, well, he was too many hand-picked opponents. He grew up like a silver spoon. You know what I mean? He grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth, all hand-picked opponents. The first 15 or 20 guys that he fought, they were awful. They were awful. I mean, they were just no contest fights. And then, you know, and I don't think he ever developed. His father came up the hard way with 100 tough fights.
Yeah.
Tough fights. And he fought some tough, tough lightweights, too. He beat some damn good fighters. And he had a good chin, too. He had a good, you know, he had a damn good chin, the father did. But like I say, he had one flaw. Left hook to the body, he threw it, he was wide open. And I think if I had to pick, you know, between him and Duran, it'd be Duran. Well, I mean, a close fight, a good fight, but I still go with Duran.
I tell you one thing with Chavez Jr. and a lot of people, I think one of the problems, since we're talking a lot about the problems of boxing, is that there are a lot of fighters, whether they come out of the Olympics or their father was a famous fighter or they're with a connected promoter or whatever, and they fight a whole lot of handpicked opponents. They get up to 25-0, and all of a sudden, you know, they're angling for a pay-per-view fight. There used to be a time, certainly when fighters fought more often, that you weren't penalized. You didn't go to the back of the line if you lost a fight, if it was entertaining enough. We talked about Alvarado and Provodnikov later tonight. Following that will be the premiere of that HBO Legendary Nights thing with the tale of Gaddy Ward. Well, Arturo Gaddy is a prime example of somebody who lost fights. He was 40-9. He lost 9 fights, but a lot of them were exciting enough that people still wanted to see him. Nobody blamed Tommy Hearns for losing that fight with Ray Leonard. Nobody blamed him for losing the fight with Marvin Hagler. They were exciting enough that, hey, people still wanted to see him. This idea that, you know, that if you're 25-0 and all of a sudden you lose a fight and you're 25-1, that you're not anything. I think that's hurt. That's hurt boxing. Too many fighters have manufactured records, and when you put them in tough, they don't know what to do. They're not learning.
Exactly.
And I think that has a lot to do with the casuality of boxing, because boxing, everyone used to almost be a hardcore boxing fan, but now the popularity seems to fade, and you have so much more casuality to it that, you know, people look at talent, and to a certain extent, talent killed the sport. Skill is, in boxing, skill really matters. If you have the talent, the physical talent and the skill, then you're basically the prime boxer. But it's so often that we see the big, explosive guy or the fast, you know, flashy guy, and we don't center on the guy who does his boxing job, does his skill, who technique is what he works on. We look at this fast explosive, and that's to a certain extent.
Well, you know, the thing is that I'm going to point out a guy who had a ton of skills. He was one of the most talented fighters of the last quarter century, is Roy Jones. HBO signed him to a contract where basically he was allowed to pick his own opponent. They were going to pay him $5 billion a pop if he fought a, you know, a garbage man or a school teacher or a police officer.
Fireman.
Yeah, fireman, you know, whatever. I mean, he was fighting all these civil servants, and you know, because they're I guess the management at HBO figured, well, people will want to see Roy Jones. He's so talented. He's got all these skills that people won't care who he's fighting. They just want to see him. Well, you know, no, not really. And then later in his career, when it dawned upon him that, you know, maybe his legacy would have been enhanced a little bit if he had fought some of these fights that people wanted to see and he was a little hesitant to take, at that point his reaction time had slowed a little bit. He was still dropping his hands, but all of a sudden when he dipped back, he wasn't evading the punches, he was getting nailed. And at that point, it was a little bit too late for him to try to bring out his inner tough guy.
His physical talent faded.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying about him. Can you blame the guy? I mean, he tried to get the easiest opponent he could every time out. I mean, it wore me out. I got tired of watching him. Well, what clown is he going to fight tonight? Who the hell is he going to fight? His brother-in-law tonight? You know, I mean, what, you know? What the hell? I got tired of putting up with him and his dancing and then humiliating the fighter on top of it. You know, and he wasn't a very nice person in the ring. He humiliated. You get these guys, then you humiliate him. And I had to laugh.
Same kind of guy, yeah.
Yeah, I had to laugh when that guy from Wales was doing the same thing to him. The commentator said, geez, he's disrespecting Jones. And I thought, well, who the hell did Jones ever respect? And now it's his turn to know how it feels to be made a fool out of, you know?
Right.
So I felt no mercy for him. No, I wasn't sorry at all for him. He deserved everything he got.
Well,
he used to get these guys.
Roy Jones' take was, I am the great Roy Jones. You people should feel privileged to observe my talent and worship at my altar. And there was more than a little touch of arrogance there. I mean, I'm not saying that it wasn't deserved. I mean, he at the top of his game, he was an extremely talented fighter. But I think one of the things that Showtime, when it was still Avis to HBO's Hertz, was good fights, not just good fighters. People are always going to gravitate more to a competitive, evenly matched bout than to a one-sided beatdown. And I think that's a problem that Floyd Mayweather is going to encounter going forward. When people stop believing that he doesn't even have a chance to be beaten, then why are you going to pay $50 to just see him, you know, beat somebody who's a 20-1 underdog again?
Yeah. Yeah, let you get tired. Fight somebody that, you know. Do you recall years ago when Ring Magazine was ranking opponents? You had 6 months. You had to defend your title every 6 months, and it couldn't be against somebody ranked 100th in the world. You know, you had to fight somebody in the top 10, so to speak. And that kept things honest. It kept good fights going. You got some damn good fights. There wasn't a hell of a lot separating the 1 to 10 in the middleweight division, let's say, in the 60s, when right before Robinson took the title. I just don't see, I don't know. I don't know what the hell to say about that. But Mayweather's got to come up and fight somebody who's going to give him a good fight. He can't keep hoaxing the public with these guys like Canelo and Guerrero, who was extremely awkward and had a good chin. Everybody thought, well, he'll give Mayweather a fight, but it was no contest. It was no contest.
Well, at this moment in the 154 weight-pound division, who can he fight to generate anything?
Well, personally, I don't think he's staying at 154. He came up to 154, actually at a catchweight, 152, to fight Alvarez for Alvarez's title. But I really think that's a little north of where he really wants to be. I expect him to go back down to welterweight because that's the weight he's most comfortable at this point. And you mentioned Dan Garcia, that's a natural 140 pounder who'd be coming up to 147. I really don't think you're going to see Floyd Mayweather too often going back up to 154.
Unless the money was there.
Unless the money was there, yeah.
If the money's there, he'll go back up. He'll go back up.
And that's what I'm thinking. The money's more up there than down at the lower weight class.
Yeah, but I think Floyd basically, you know, the deal that he signed a kind of sweetheart deal with CBS Showtime that Roy Jones signed with HBO, which was basically where he has more control over his destiny and over the selection of his opponents than any fighter has had since Roy Jones basically was given a free hand by HBO to pick all those school teachers and firemen. And besides, the thing is that in Floyd's defense, I mean, who the heck does anybody really think now can give him a fight? And unless he falls off the face of the earth and gets old overnight, which I don't see happening, unless he comes back to the pack, there's nobody pursuing him who's good enough to give him the kind of fight we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. But Floyd being his own promoter, the way I see it, I'm looking at him trying to make as much money as possible on both ends. So I would try that he would try to pick something that will look halfway competitive.
Floyd is tremendously protective of his zero in the loss column. I think if at this point he's got enough money, he's got enough power, he's very protective of his legacy, as certain fighters are, certainly Bernard Hopkins is, that if you said, hey, you can make an extra $10 million to fight this guy who might have a little bit of a chance to beat you, or you could take less money and to fight this other guy who's got no chance to beat you, I'm not sure that he would go for the tougher fight simply because I think it's really, really important to him to retire with a zero in the loss column. You know, he does not want a loss in his record. Although some people will tell you that the first fight with Castillo might have been a loss. I mean, there was a lot of people. I went back and looked at that fight a few weeks ago on tape, it wouldn't have shocked anybody if he'd lost that fight. He was not unbeatable then. I think he's perceived as more unbeatable now than he was back then.
Great. Well, Bernard,
you're probably right.
We really want to thank you for all the time you've given us tonight. And I ask you just for a few minutes, and man, this has been a tremendous education for all of us here. And we appreciate your time, and please thank your wife for allowing us to have your time tonight, because I know this is a weekend night and you probably guys have something to do. But we appreciate it. Anytime you have some free time, please let us know and we'll get you right back on.
Well, I'm going to put on the LSU Ole Miss game and see how my alma mater is doing.
There you go.
Yeah. A lot of good games on today.
Yes, Notre Dame, USC is on now.
Johnny Manziel just scored and put one up over Auburn. He just ran in the end. That's going to be a good game, yeah. A lot going on tonight.
Yeah.
All right, guys. All right, next week I get my kidney stones out.
Yeah.
And, I need some help.
Yeah.
I got about 10 of them in there. I hope I got some kidneys left when I get done with it, that's all. Jesus, God, what an ordeal. Talk to you guys next week, all right?
All right, thanks, Chris.
All right, see you guys. Goodbye now.
Okay, take care. That was a job. We even extended an extra 20 minutes here. That was a great show.
Oh, yeah, it was worth it.
Yep. We'll see. Since you're the only one here with us, you want to lead us out?
Oh, man, this was wonderful. Oh, man, this was definitely wonderful.
Yeah,
I want to thank Chaz and Danny Batchelder. I hope, you know, your promotions go well. Sounds very good, family-oriented. I want to thank Bernard. His insight is very much, much valued. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch?
Great. I want to thank everybody for coming on tonight, Chaz and Danny. They're always – Danny's always fun to be with. Bernard is always knowledgeable, and my best friend out there, Chris, of course, sometimes takes a little bit of the conversation to himself, but he's always funny with it, and he's always right on the money. So I want to thank them, and I truly want to thank you, Zito, for being here with me tonight and helping me get through this this program. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there someday with your child, take them over and introduce them to one of the guys. I happened to be with my grandson the other day, and as we were coming out of the SO, he walked over to one of the new rookies who was having a bad day. He said, looked at her, and he says, "I want to thank you for everything you do." And the smile that she got on her face was just, he couldn't have given her $1 million and she couldn't have gotten a better smile. So it really does mean something to all of us. These programs are also dedicated to fallen officers, Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Kendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerbin, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogel of the Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford of the Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro of the Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Uniform Division, Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PD Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, and our latest entry, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Sarasota County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time, we're going to be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your face. May softly on your fields and the sun shine softly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families in the hollow of his hand. Good night.
Shemalek ma'ilama Shemahezahilma Sonashene voratfet Hakuig again ma'ilama
County Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. We love you.